Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Tom Wynn back on the show. Tom has continued to dazzle the walleye world with high finishes in his tournament performances and continues to go to new bodies of water and do really, really well. He's obviously a forward sonar guru. That is a big, big part of Tom's story. And just how much impact and influence he's having on the industry these days. He's just seeing tremendous success in his short tournament career. And, you know, that's a big part of this as well. You know, having Tom on and having these conversations, it's amazing just how new and fresh, these conversations really are and seem, because Tom hasn't been around, very long. You know, some of the facts about it is that, you know, Tom hasn't really been fishing walleyes very long, 40-something year old guy, and he's only been targeting walleyes intentionally for a handful of years. And so, you know, it's very impressive, you know, his resume of high tournament finishes on the highest level. That being said, you know, what makes him tick is still one of those things that isn't quite so clear. In this interview, you know, I asked Tom what it is that motivates him to go out and catch the next big bag of walleyes. And his answer is phenomenal. And I think that it's a big part of my understanding now, after listening to Tom talk about himself a little bit and reflect about what makes him tick and what drives him the most. It definitely explains why he is such an anomaly. I just have so much respect for everything that Tom is doing, every intention that he has to influence the industry and anglers, and the teaching he has. This is a man of great character and authenticity and integrity, and because of that, I couldn't possibly appreciate more any moment that I get a chance to talk to Tom Wynn. And I am so glad to do another one of these podcasts for you all to listen to him talk and learn from him. And yes, there's a ton to take away, of course, as always, with this conversation with Tom Wynn. So, with that introduction, let's get into it. Another great JMO podcast with Tom Wynn. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River, and the Northwest Angle. It's a big spot on the map. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their eye candy kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the eye candy kit. Man, what's the update, Tom?
Well, I mean, it's just my going into my, you know, third full season here. With the NWT, Nate and I, my AIM team partner, and I announced at the beginning of the season last year, you know, we're not going to fish the AIM circuit anymore, but we did qualify for the national championship. So we went over to Sakakawea a couple weeks ago, fished that monster body of water for the first time. But really just been, you know, fishing, you know, just concentrating on these tournaments, and then just everything in between is just so busy, you know, like my day job, my, you know, working on, and something we can talk about here in about 6 weeks or so, working on a little project that I'm gonna be ready to share with the public coming up here in August. And basically, I've been focused on trying to see how fast I can help grow the walleye industry. Now, fishing industry is a whole big deal, but you know, you got bass, it's huge. You got saltwater, it's huge. And walleye, the walleye industry is just sitting here stagnant. And a few years ago, if you would have told me I was even thinking about trying to do this, I'd have thought you're crazy, because I'm like, who am I? You know, but now that, you know, I've had a few good years, and you know, along the way, I've been teaching people and helping people with forward-facing sonar mainly. And I've been spending a lot of time working on something that I'm excited to share, to basically take the education, fishing education, to the next level.
You know, you mentioned some of that stuff. This is like, this is actually what I kind of had on my notes with a question mark by it. I wasn't even sure if I would bring it up, but I do find, and I think this is going to be kind of funny, I guess I just got to ask you about your social media, man. Like how much of this is work for you, and you know, and then balancing all the, you know, kind of the comedy stuff. I mean, I say it's comedy, not, you know, it's like your personality, you know, it's your personality, but you know, tell me about your social media strategy in that regard, because it's for some people, it's a gift and a curse. It's like, you got to do it, you know, but this day and age with marketing, but you seem like you just have a super fun time with it, man.
I do have fun with it. And, you know, when you ask me if it's work, I mean, I guess technically, like, I'm supporting, you know, the sponsors who have gotten behind me and helping me design baits, rods, things like that. But like, I don't feel it as work at all. Like, here's the thing, I'll be honest with you and to my sponsors, like, even if at this point, like, if I didn't have any sponsors, I would still be doing the same exact thing, showing people what I'm using and teaching them, like showing them, you know, my, for example, the black tungsten jigs and why I like those, and the new olive colored ones, why I think those are important, like, and the Daiwa rods, all those things. Like, and the thing is, why I don't think it's work is because I don't have to think about it. Like, whenever I'm doing these videos and stuff, and I do get this a lot now, like, people, like, or if I'm doing a TV show with somebody, or doing an interview, doing radio, whatever, like, I started getting the comment, I never thought about it before, but they're like, you know, you only had to do that once. You only had to record that one time. Or Nate and I in the national championship for AIM, we had a camera guy for one of the outdoor shows that are out there. The camera guy got in the boat and he spent some time with us, and he's like, do you guys have your own TV show?
And we're like, yeah, dude.
And we're like, no, we don't. And he says, gosh, it just seems like you guys would have your show, because we were in a tournament, we could win $100,000 boat, and you know, me and Nate together, we just cut up all the time, we fish super relaxed, but in the meantime, when there's nothing going on, I was down there at my live scope screen, you know, explaining to the camera what I'm doing, all this stuff. And so I think the camera guy, Noah, he's like, that's why he thought, dang, these guys must have their own show. But the reason it's not work for me, and the reason it's not easy the reason that it is easy for me, is because I'm not lying. I'll just be honest with you. I'm not lying about what I'm using, my techniques, what colors I'm using, how I approach fish. It's all out there. And I'm learning now. I've only been doing this, like I said, 3 years full time. But I'm seeing now there's a lot of people who do well in tournaments, that at the end of the tournament, they have something tied on their rod for pictures that's not even close to what they use in the tournament.
Isn't that's probably, You know, if you look at tournament fishing, competitive tournament fishing, you know, bass or walleye, you know, historically or like before social media, like a lot of these guys that, you know, the more traditional approach to it, you know, it was all about secrets. There were a lot of secrets, but with social media and, you know, camera boats and all that stuff, like everything's just naturally more transparent nowadays, right? So there's sort of a, you know, we're kind of in those times. But I think, yeah, like with you, I think, you know, and to your point, I feel like the first couple of times we talked was, you probably didn't have all the sponsors that you did now. But yeah, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, before you even had the sponsors that you have now, you were sharing the information. You know what? Even if you said that you weren't sharing 100% of your information, you've always, you know, true to your word, you've always shared enough information that was certainly more than, you know, the average guy that finishes in the top 10 as often as you do. And it's always been meaningful just because, I think that it is like personally when I, you know, I guess, and on my eyes on this, like I work in the industry, I film a lot of these guys. Like when I see you making these videos, like it is so authentic. The consumer nowadays is pretty dialed into that. And yeah, man, I mean, I didn't want to say it before you said it, but I think that's a huge, I think that's a piece to how you've had such a huge impact in this. But I think there's maybe more like, you know, how would you maybe reflect on, you know, the attention that you've gotten, the influence that you've had? You do the seminars, you meet a lot of people, you go to all these places, you know, you finish high end tournaments, but you also film some TV shows, social media, like you're doing a lot of things that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that might like you for a lot of different things. Where would you say the majority of your attention or popularity really comes from? I mean, what is it about you? You know, you got to really be, you know, kind of self-aware in this, you know, if possible. But like, what do you think is everybody's favorite part of you?
Honesty. I get it. Never thought anything about it until, like you said, I had to learn to be more self-aware and just kind of, you know, I had some few people real close to me say, you have to go ahead and start taking credit for that. Like, yeah. You have to go ahead and, you know, people say that you're honest. We appreciate you telling us the truth, or, you know, just sharing with us exactly what you're looking at on that live scope screen, what you're using in the boat, all of that, just from social media messages, people after seminars come up, and it's awesome because I did like 18 or 15 live scope seminars over the winter across the upper Midwest. And it was the attendees, and they were big, and the, some of the bigger venues, you know, they tell me on multiple of them, that's the biggest turnout they've ever had. I had some smaller little local boat, like J&K Marine and Detroit Lakes had their open house. We had like 20 some people there for the little thing. That was awesome. And then my last one of the year had over 600 people. It's like, what? But I think that's what it is. And, what you said earlier is like, it's to me, it's all about growing this. And now at this point, it's about growing this industry, getting walleye fishing, bringing some integrity back to tournament fishing. You know, you look at just bass and walleye, from what I've told, as far as tournaments go, back 20, 30 years ago, used to be on pretty equal footing as far as popularity and money and funding and all that stuff. And then, you know, bass took a turn, and they made the right decision, and the walleye circuits seemingly didn't. And so a lot of the sponsorship money went to the bass side. The walleye side struggled a little bit, but in the professional sports world, just in general, like you take NBA basketball, you take the NFL, you take everything is on camera. There are no secrets. Steph Curry came out, for example, started shooting threes at a record pace. And then now every team is shooting threes at a record pace because there's no secrets. He showed people how he is doing it. He taught people, and now everybody's doing it all the way down to high school. And so in walleye fishing, everything's been so secretive. There's a lot of, you know, if not so secretive, it's not being truthful on techniques, how you're fishing. And so now it's just going to be all about, for me, it's just teaching people. And that comes first with forward facing sonar, because there's a few of us who are very efficient with this, and there's a lot of people who want to be, and there's a lot of people who are against it. And the people who are against it have it, but can't understand it or fail to want to learn it. And I urge them, like in my seminars and everything, people come up to me and tell me like, oh, you would never have even cashed a check in these walleye tournaments if it wasn't for Garmin LifeScope. I'm like, so? I don't care. and I literally, it doesn't hurt my feelings. I'm like, okay, so what? But I tell them, if you're against it and you're telling me those statements that I would never have cashed a check, if you're telling me that, that means you must be a pretty darn good traditional angler. And if that's the case, if you know how to go catch walleyes traditionally, lindy rigging, trolling, whatever, and then just let me teach you a fraction of what I know with electronics, and you'll be so much better than me.
Is forward-facing sonar just the one thing that separates a traditional wall angler, or is there things that, you know, somebody without forward-facing sonar can learn from what's going on this day and age and still be a more modern angler, or still, you know, apply some of these things? You know, do we have to have forward sonar to consider ourselves like the modern day cutting edge angler?
Kind of, but let's just say this. So yes and no. Yes, me in the fact that you, with forward facing sonar, you can watch firsthand how those fish are reacting, what structure they're relating to, how they react to certain colors, for example, and I'm studying a lot on that. But, or you could, like, for example, I'm using forward-facing sonar, and I'm watching fish's reactions to certain things. And, for example, the Mississippi River, pool 3, I locked down to pool 4 in that tournament, fish the weeds, and very, very thick weeds, shallow water. And in practice, I would see how these fish were reacting to my baits that I was throwing, like my traditional baits that I was throwing, just a jig and plastic, jig and live bait, whatever it might have been. I was watching their reactions, and I was thinking like, okay, so if it gets super windy in here, what I'm doing is going to be almost impossible, because fishing super high wind on Lake of the Woods, for example, in 20 to 30 feet of water is actually easier than fishing 2 foot waves in 3 to 5 feet of water live scoping, because, you know, there's no room for error, and you're moving even quicker over these fish. So I was thinking, okay, if it gets windy and I'm just judging the reaction of these fish on calm days, like if it's windy, I'm going to have to throw one of these. I'm going to have to tie this on for my co-angler, which it ended up being a Northland Deep V underspin and with a black paddle shad. And, you know, I'm very vocal on natural colors. And in that river water, it was a little bit stained and actually muddy that first day. But that black casts a big silhouette. So I was live scoping, and my co-angler was in the back, pretty much yo-yoing this underspin with a black swim bait on it, and he out-caught me.
He was casting blind behind you.
Yes, he was casting blind.
Yeah.
And so he outcaught me. That's the first time I've ever been outcaught in an NWT tournament by my call angler. And we were in the weigh-in by noon, 12:30, I think.
But so realistically, the information that was dialed in, you know, based on, you know, during pre-fish with forward facing sonar and everything that you computed, you know, you could have been, you know, hypothetically, I mean, it happened with your co-angler in the back of your same boat, but imagine you talk to another, you know, a talented or skilled angler in a boat that's essentially behind you. If you gave him the information, you gave him all the information, but he was in a boat that just physically didn't have forward sonar, very potentially, like almost certainly there's could have been an example where, you know, so would that's new school though, right? I mean, that's a new school
That's what I was so you picked up where I was going with that. So
that's where so many of my podcasts and even podcasts I've had with you, and then responses to individuals that have written me just, you know, novels as a response to a podcast with you in the past. And, so often, I mean, it's all gratitude. It's always, you know, so like positive, but then there's these, you know, between the lines questions of like, you know, but I just don't quite know how to interpret said thing. And then there's a lot of people that are like, I just love listening to it, but I don't have forward sonar, so I don't know what direction to take it.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a ton of takeaways, I think. There's a ton of takeaways for, you know, let's just call a more traditional angler that just has a more traditional setup and a traditional approach to fishing. And they're trying to, you know, sort of take the lowest hanging fruit of what these new school guys like yourself that are on the cutting edge. Very few people are going to be able to emulate you specifically out there unless they're your co-angler. But in the podcast form, whatever, I've had a tremendous response to listeners on here that don't have forward sonar. And I was one of them until last year. I have forward sonar now, so I can't talk that way. But mm-hmm. I was one of them where I couldn't get enough of the new school quotations. I couldn't get enough of the new school information about fish reactions and, you know, baits and cadences and locations that you're finding fish. I can't, you know, without it, I can't do 100% on my own what you're doing, especially finding those suspended fish and things like that. But there's a ton that I've taken away. So your story is like, I guess to me, you know, I think that there's a lot of that, but I like hearing it from you, because, like, you know, your seminars, you have 600 people at a seminar, man, you know, certainly not, there's a lot of, you know, households there or whatever, but let's just say it's 600 individual anglers that all have their own boat, man, it's not 100% across the board that everybody's got forward sonar. I mean, there's people there listening to you taking a ton away that don't have it. I mean, so yes, I feel like there's definitely a blurred lines there, but it's but it takes the right kind of angler. You got to be open-minded, right? You gotta you know, for sure. Well, we're gonna expand on that, but the other thing that I kind of wanted to go back to, so I cut you off, we went down a rabbit hole, we'll continue down it, but before we move on, kind of what you're talking about earlier, things that you got going on now, some of your biggest focuses, you know, off the water, or just some of your bigger projects that you're working on. It sounds like even after a few years of tournament fishing, you know, the beginning of hopefully a long career in tournament fishing, but you're working on other things. Does that mean that you're kind of already thinking about maybe your legacy, maybe, you know, maybe just having kind of legacy thoughts, or just what kind of impact you really want to have, or what's really fueling those kind of feelings that you're having with your intentions with some of these other projects?
Just, I guess the main goal I have, or the main reasoning behind it, is the fact that I came into this not knowing anybody. I came into it in, you know, I'm in my mid 40s. So you look at, you know, a lot of the anglers on the bass side, walleye side that are coming up using forward facing sonar and just being on that top level now, they're younger. And I just feel that I'm in a good spot right now. Like, just at the very beginning, and I told you my story, how I got started in this. Like, when I first picked up that first walleye tournament at Leech Lake, I called the tournament director to get in, and I didn't realize that Leech Lake walleye tournament was always full. But somebody dropped out because of COVID, and they had 99 teams, one opening left, and I got that spot. So why did that happen? Like, and then without fishing that tournament, I wouldn't be here right now. Like, I wouldn't be.
It's destiny.
You know what I mean? And so all of these things is just like, wow, you know, it's just like lining up. And then me being the age I am right now, being a small business owner, like, I have the some of the young anglers looking up to me, or the young anglers chasing me. Like, and that's awesome to hear. Like, I've been told on the AIM circuit, NWT, like, our goal is to beat you. And, you know, and at first I'm like, well, geez, but now it's like, okay, I get it. That's awesome. And then, since I am, you know, almost 45 years old, I can, those young guys can chase me. They can, I can help teach them. And then these older anglers who are in their 60s, 70s, even older, that are curious, I think I can still teach them, and they have somewhat of a trust with me versus having some kid come in and teach them. So I'm in a good spot right now to be able to teach. And when, you know, when I first started this, I'm like, there's not a chance. I'm only going to fish tournaments for a couple of years. If I don't break even in tournaments, then I'm not going to do them anymore. But then, you know, it's been really good. And my goal was to, you know, can a person these days actually make a living in the fishing industry that hasn't already been in the fishing industry for 20 years? And so, and then, so that is my ultimate challenge to myself, is to figure out that little niche where showing people something that hasn't been done yet, and taking that and expanding on it, and helping, again, helping this industry grow. Because with all the secrets, with all that stuff, the growth is just so slow. But then if I can teach people and show people what I'm doing, and get everybody closer to the same page, it's going to push all of those top anglers even more. It's going to push technology even more, which is weird to think. How could technology get any better? But it will. And so, yeah, if we can just, you know, push this industry. And for me personally, it is that challenge for myself to be like, you know what, it was a dream since I was a little kid. And then when reality hit that this, if you want to call it a profession, is actually cost money typically. And of just a handful of people make money doing this. It's a challenge to me at this age to see if it can be done. And I'm learning in the last few years, it all comes down to honesty and education. Like, literally just show people.
It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River, and the Northwest Angle. It's a big spot on the map. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their Eye Candy Kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the Eye Candy Kit. There's no question that you and, you know, the, anybody at the top of the industry, but you know, of any industry, like, you know, you're going to push people. People around you are going to, you know, there's going to be a target on your back when you're having that success. And hopefully, you know, it's all a compliment, right? I mean, anytime you're getting that kind of attention, it's all, you know, it means that you're doing good things, you know. But what pushes you? Like, is who pushes you? Like when you're out there and the competitive juices are really flowing, you make that part seem really, really easy, but you can't not be a super competitive guy if, you know, to have the success that you've had against the competition you've had it against. Like, what drives you to catch the next big bag of walleyes?
Just where I came from, I guess. Like, It's all my, it's just how I've been forever. Like, I came from not much at all. My dad was an immigrant from Vietnam, came over here. Him and my mom did the best they could to provide for us. We didn't have much money at all. So a lot of that, it made me who I am as an adult. Being the first to finish college out of my family. And then, man, even my first job in high school was at a shirt factory. I don't even think I've ever talked about that on a podcast, but my first job in high school was at a shirt factory. And my job was to sew labels, the size labels, onto the back of shirts, right? So in the first week I was there, you know, we got paid, it's called piece rate. You got your minimum pay and then you got paid the more you did. And in the first week I was there, you know, I asked, I'm like, so when do we start making extra? What number do I need to get to? And they're like, well, the record is this. And within a week I had the record broke. You know, like, I always am trying to be better, to push myself harder all the time, because my dad took a big risk getting over here. His story on how he got over here, it's most people didn't survive the way he got over here. So, like, it's like he's so proud to see his kids doing so well over here because he took that big risk and came over here. So, you know, I'm doing it for myself. I'm always the competitive. And it doesn't matter if it's fishing or sewing shirt labels on or doing fingernails. I'm competitive. I want to be the best. But now, you know, I want to teach people to be the best. But then a lot of it has to do with where I came from and coming from nothing, but trying to, I don't even think it's trying to prove anything to myself. I just want to be the best I can be, no matter what it is, whether it's fingernails or fishing. You know what I mean? Like, everything that I set my mind to.
For a lot of guys, they wear their motivation on their sleeve. I mean, they exude, you know, the competitive juices, and they're, you know, it doesn't take very long, you know, to sort of size a lot mm-hmm. of competitive anglers up in terms of, you know, just their, what their motivations are. But with you, again, like, you're so lighthearted. Your posts, you know, throughout your pre-fishes and every little video after a tournament, and you're just in the boat. You have a smile on your face. You're telling people the truth. I guess you're a little bit tougher to size up in that regard. It just you make it, you almost make it look easy. But we know it's not. We know that it's a tremendous amount of work that you put in, mm-hmm. you know, and you have a knack for these things. And there's a skill level there. Like, I feel like people now can understand that you're on a high level and that comes with success, but your motivations are definitely different. Like, you just said it. I mean, that's a tremendous part of your story, and that's never going to leave you, man. That makes you even more dangerous, because nobody has control. Nobody else has control over your motivation. If you're chasing somebody, you know, if you're chasing somebody and that person stumbles and you beat them that week, like, you know, that, you know, that's not it. Like, it shouldn't be your motive. Like, for you, man, like, that is.
Yeah, I guess I've never even, I appreciate you saying that, because you made me realize that too just now, because I just thought about it when you said chasing somebody. I'm like, yeah, I guess there's nobody that.
But you, like, you feel just, that, right? I mean, like, yeah, you know, like, yeah, like you said it yourself, like there's just other people out there, and I'm sure, and they mean it. And it's a total compliment when somebody comes up to you and says, oh man, I'm going to get you this time. I'm going to get you this time. But you're not walking around in the crowd shaking somebody's hand saying, I'm going to get you this time.
No.
Like, like, the, why is Tom Wynn so casual about doing awesome? But but you're really not. Like, there's definitely a storm brewing under the surface the night before tournament day, and it's like nobody else has control over you other than yourself, and you really have that bridled, I feel like.
Yeah.
What's the update on the season? Maybe give me the 10-minute version of the tournament so far. What have been some meaningful things this year? Maybe things that you've learned, maybe some just a you know, just what are the fun recaps of the tournament so far this year?
Yeah, so I guess the first term of the year was Lake Erie, and then I've been out there before, couldn't really figure out a casting bite back then, but then this time went out, figured out a live scope bite pretty quick, actually. And then, you know, then it was just about finding the right colored water, learning that part of Lake Erie. You know, you got three or four different colors of water, and there's one color that was just the most, where the fish were most active. The water temp was just right in that color of water. All these things, I learned so much there, and I owe a lot of that to the knowledge of, you know, learning traditional, again, going back to that traditional form of fishing, the and the science behind it. I owe a lot of that to Corey Springle and Chase and Kimos, like, just to learn all that stuff, break that stuff down quicker. And I came out of there with I think it was a 17th place finish. And then from there, went to Mississippi River pool three. And like I said, you know, I pool three, I could not find any weeds. I couldn't, it was just muddy up there. So I focused on pool four. Then most of the practice, found a bite immediately in some weeds, and just went around trying to duplicate that in different areas, and came out of there with an eighth place finish. And that was the second event in NWT. And then Nate Wolski and I, my AIM team partner, we fished our very last AIM tournament together just a couple weekends ago. And that was the national championship that we qualified for last year. Went to Sakakawea, learned a ton about that giant place, first time out there, and came in fourth. So I can't complain about any of those. And I think I'm sitting in sixth place for Angler of the Year right now in the NWT, kind of in that same, you know, placing that I was in last year at that time. And but you said a funny story about one of these tournaments. So it was on pool three tournament NWT. So we launched at the casino there, if you're familiar with that body of water at all. But the casino is upstream from the lock and dam, about maybe a mile, a little bit more maybe. And when barges come through, you can't go anywhere. When barges are anywhere in the vicinity, they will not let pleasure boats in, fishing boats in. Barges get the priority. So in practice, Tommy Kimos, sharing housing with those guys this year, in practice, he took he's notorious, famous for, you know, being a little risky out there, but he found a way, literally, over a closing dam, not the big dam, of course. Okay, this is a little closing dam, like in the really shallow water, and through the woods. I'm not even kidding. Like, it wasn't even like a creek. It was like a flooded patch of woods. through the woods into the Vermilion River, which then connects to the Mississippi River, and completely bypassing the dam. So on day two, thunderstorming is just about to start. Big barge coming through that's going to take an hour and a half to 2 hours. And Tommy's like, I'm going that way. You coming? I'm like, dude, my boat's bigger than yours. I don't know if I'm going to make it. But anyway, long story short, we went.
And that obviously wasn't out of bounds like that. That sounds crazy.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. No, it was all good. And so it was risky because you could easily get stuck. I mean, we're talking 8 inches of water.
That's like jet boat country.
Yes. Duck boats go back there and get stuck. So we're traversing all this stuff, trimmed way up, flinging mud back on each other and everything. And we all, four of us that housed together, we made it through there. And it was quite the adventure. Our co-anglers would be something they won't forget.
Yeah.
And then my co-angler goes and is responsible for me shooting up a ton of places to finish eighth. So he has a really good story to tell.
Dude, that's awesome. You saved a bunch of time doing that?
Yeah, we caught two fish before anybody got down there.
Oh man, that's hilarious, yeah. Dude.
We made it through probably 30 minutes before the other anglers got through the lock.
Man, you guys are crazy. That is so funny, man. That is so funny. Man, oh man.
And not a scratch on the boat. That's the awesome part is. That which is super fortunate, but yeah.
Oh my gosh. Now, that's a great story, man. That's a great story. What was your assessment or what's like your recap of Sakakawea? I'm very curious. That's my favorite body of water. I'm out here in Bismarck. Like I interviewed Eric McCoy after that tournament. You know, they had a really good tournament and all that, but there was a good number of anglers in that tournament, that AIM National Championship shootout, you guys included, that had not been on that body of water. I'm curious, man, what did you love it? Did you hate it? Was it cool? What's your story with Sakakawea?
Yeah, I really, really, really liked it. Like, again, first day there, just went out and, you know, just went looking really shallow because, again, I just came off the Mississippi River. It just was still in my head. Of course, there's no weeds, but I was just going shallow, found fish. Lot of, you know, in pre-fishing, I don't think I caught a fish under 20 inches at Sakakawea. They are healthy, they're fat, and they're literally everywhere. You just have to know what you're looking at. because there's a lot of junk fish there too.
Oh yeah.
So I think a lot of people get intimidated when they, or if they're looking at the forward facing sonar, seeing all these marks, like, oh shoot, it's all sheephead or all white bass. But no, there's walleyes mixed in. You just have to know what you're looking at. But the walleyes are everywhere. Found them from 4 feet deep to 25 feet deep, and it's just a matter of there was no consistent pattern though. And from anybody I talked to before that tournament, they would say, you know, the consensus there is fish are there today and gone tomorrow. Big bag one day, zero the next day. But I can see that in the fact that before forward facing sonar, but I could see that even with live scope, I could definitely tell that the fish moved a lot more there. They were never just always shallow, always deep, suspended on the bottom. It didn't matter. They're just all over, but not at the same time. So if they weren't suspended, they were on the bottom. But if they were on the bottom in 20 feet, they were on the bottom in 8. It was just weird.
Now, when you say that, you know, the consistent pattern, are you talking about like the tournament grade fish, the big fish, or is that a general statement that you found with the majority of the walleyes?
Just the majority of the walleyes. There was no rhyme or reason from day to day on, you know, you just had to cover water and find that daily pattern.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fish in the day, man. I definitely, oh my gosh. Yeah. That's the best guy, the guys that fish Sakakawea the best. You know, I mean, you know, there's a lot of local legends around here, you know, whether it's guides or, you know, guys that fish the local tournament circuits or whatever. But, you know, just kind of the local, just like anywhere, just like any where if you were to go to any capital walleye fishery, you know, there's going to be a local community of fishing. You know, for me being out here, it's, you know, I could rattle off a handful of names, but there's no question that in what I've learned on that body of water is it really epitomizes guys that can go fish the day.
Yep.
That's
a place for that.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. Yeah. And you guys had a great finish. So that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, great recap. I love the updates from you. I do have since the last time I had you on, this is probably the most like wrote in request to have you back on, since, The Next Bite aired with you and Chase and Brett King up on Lake of the Woods. Since that aired, I've had just countless people reach out just, you know, to have you on and to talk about Lake of the Woods. Obviously, we're this far into this conversation. We're not going to go another 40 minutes on it, but let's see if we can spend 8 to 10 minutes recapping some Lake of the Woods conversation and just give that some love if you're cool with that. I'm just curious about Lake of the Woods in general. You know, your history, you've got a cool little history with Lake of the Woods. It's not where you're from, but you fish the tournaments up there. Now you're filming episodes with The Next Bite and those guys. I mean, you know, you got to be learning a lot about Lake of the Woods. You know, you guys, you're definitely fishing it with live scope. That's another one of those bodies of water, like Erie or whatever, where it's like, trolling, and then all of a sudden live scope shows up and it's like our heads are blowing off our bodies. You know, in regards to what you guys did to film that, it was windy, you guys were catching absolute giants. I'm sure you were there for a few days, or you know, you were up there, you know, like putting together a pattern. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah, I mean it was basically a you could even call it a reenactment of the championship that Nate and I won up there. So, you know, in that tournament when Nate and I were there, we found that to be a special place. It took me 3 days there to catch a walleye when we were up there. But when I figured out the pattern, it was basically the same thing that me, Chase, were doing on that show. And it happened to be super windy, wavy. Wasn't quite as bad as we had. Easily 4-footers, 5-footers out there. You know, the TV doesn't do it justice, but being able to show people too that live scope can be done in that, I don't, you know, like it's not easy, but it's doable. And they're just giants in there in at Lake of the Woods. And so that was the second time I'd been up there. First time was in that championship. And so we wanted to kind of show people just how effective this style of fishing can be if you're out there just, you know, going out, want to take your kid out, grandkid out to catch our personal best fish or something like that. It's definitely doable. And, you know, it's just a open mud basin out there. And when you're scanning around, it is like Erie, except for in Erie, when you pan around, there's times I'm in a school of fish at Erie that's 2 miles long, panning around with each swipe of the live scope, I'm seeing 30, 40 walleyes. And they're suspended throughout the water column all the way up and down. Lake of the Woods, they're not like that. They're mostly on the bottom. And to then be able to dictate size. So you know, you have to study your screens, dictate size, and figure out what they want to eat. Chase was throwing a reaction bait from one of his sponsors, and I definitely wasn't using that bait.
Yeah, you guys are using multiple baits. I remember that. I mean, I think you were running a tungsten jig, with some bait on it, and and Chase was using a more, you know,
he was using the finisher, I think. And that was, you know, one of the first videos that they got of that.
Yeah, that was
used
before it was even actually launched.
Yeah. You know, fishing that and then getting adjusted to his electronics is not the brand I use, and getting adjusted to his trolling motor, It took a little adjustment. It took me about 40 minutes. I told those guys too. I'm like, give me about 45 minutes. I'm gonna have to get.
If it were me, I'd be like, give me 3 weeks, and I still won't quite have it figured out.
And it was funny. They just went and sat in the back of the boat, and I was up there in those big waves, scanning around, and I'm like, all right. And I made a cast, caught a giant, and then it was on. It was kind of funny, like. We caught some big fish, but I told them, I'm like, you guys, because I'm there putting them on the fish so they can try to catch them. And I'm like, guys, I would have already had 55 pounds by now.
Yeah. No, you know, one thing, you know, when we talked about one of the first times, if not the first time that you and I talked here on this podcast was after you had won that state championship, that Minnesota State mm-hmm. AIM championship up there. And one thing, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but, you know, one thing that you said that I took away, you know, when you were talking about putting together that big fish pattern, you know, finding the forage, which included like the small schools of sauger.
Yep.
But you talked about, you said something there that's the first time that I'd ever heard it, and it really stuck with me. Like it's still a thing that like that is a big deal in my head. And anyways, you fishing forage as the structure, mm-hmm. like fishing mm-hmm. forage, like you found the forage as structure. You were just sort of processing it that way because you describe yourself at that time as a structure fisherman. Maybe you still do, but yep. you know, you talk about being a structure fisherman, but you know, it's all subtle structure out there. You know, you could easily, you know, you could easily say in some of those big expansive mud flats that Lake of the Woods has in certain areas, you know, it's structured less. So,
it is,
so you gotta think outside the box and think of, you know, do I fish watercolor as structure? Do I fish water temperature as structure? Or in that scenario, you talked about fishing the forage as structure. I am mm-hmm. so curious now, like how you sort of describe that, and how often is that even on other bodies of water a thing for you, fishing the forage, or, you know, interpreting forage as just like pieces to the structure of like how fish are going to set up, like how often you're looking for the forage in a certain type of way, you know, to find the walleyes that you're looking for.
Yeah. So I've been to two places, where the forage has been the former structure, Lake of the Woods. And even like when we went to film with the next bite, the bottom was full. It was weird though. The saugers weren't schooled up the same as they were, when Nate and I were there. What they were schooled more in like a mast, I guess, when Nate and I were there, like a, almost like a tall ball. And, just on the bottom though, you know what I mean? Like just about 20 of them or so just on the bottom. This time you can see saugers just littering the bottom. Like not even, they're just everywhere. And so then it was just a matter of going through them. And usually when you quit seeing them, and then that means you're kind of to the edge. And then usually I would be working that edge. So I guess it's like people working a weed line.
Yeah.
I was working the sauger line, I guess, looking back at it. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. That's mind blowing, though. That's mind bending, literally. So, yeah, like I'm curious how often that shows up in, you know, when you're breaking down any other body of water.
Yeah. And the same as Green Bay. Last time we were there, the alewives were spawning and they were dying off. It was about to end. But if you could find those schools that were still active and not dying, then those were the most active walleyes were too. It was hard to find there though, because those walleyes were just gorged for weeks, on them. But it was the same type thing, just going then and scanning around looking for those clouds. There was a couple times in that pre-fish on Green Bay where I'm going along and I'm, you know, in the typical trolling depths where people are trolling around me, like 25, 30 feet of water. And I'm like, looking at my 2D as I'm going across, I'm like, what's only 12 feet deep here? But that's how thick those
they were computing as the bottom on your graph. Oh
yep.
My gosh.
And then, so then I stopped and I learned this from crappie fishing. actually, with my old friend Norm. I take him crappie fishing every fall. You've probably seen some social media posts with him. And so I learned this with the big school of crappies him and I saw two or three falls ago now, winters ago. Big school of crappies on forward-facing sonar. And then down below the schools of crappies are one or two giant northerns just sitting there. Like, you mean 25 feet of water. And school of crappies is 3 feet down to about 10 feet down. And then down at like 20 feet, you see this one or two giant marks just watching them. And I spent a good amount of time just kicking back, letting Norm fish, but just watching those northerns and watching how they react and when they would come up to eat. And so when I see these massive, I'm talking big schools of bait when I'm walleye fishing, it doesn't happen so much in Minnesota, but in the Great Lakes, when I see these massive schools of bait, they will actually, it looks like you see on the Discovery Channel, where on the ocean, where the fish start chasing and these bait getting these little whirlwinds, mm-hmm. or, you know, whirlpools. It looks like that. But I'm sitting there, I'll just go look. And then at the bottom of that is now I have to bring my distance closer to me on my live scope. I usually shoot out pretty far when I'm searching, but then when it gets so thick like that, I have to bring it closer to me to separate all those individual fish and that bait ball sometimes so I can actually see what's lurking underneath them or in them. There's times, I'm not kidding, there's a giant fish in the bait ball. The bait ball is not alarmed, but there's a giant mark in the middle of the bait ball sometimes with an empty halo around it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy to see that. And then to be able, and then sometimes to throw something down there that's different. See, a lot of people want to match the hatch, you know, that's what they say. I like to throw something completely different because when that goes down through that bait to that fish, they're like, what? And then they grab it. You know what I mean?
you gotta be different. If there's 2 billion, you know, alewife right there, then you gotta do something to set yourself apart. That makes total sense.
Yeah, you throw another alewife down there, and the fish is probably like, oh, big deal.
Yeah, <You know? laughs> like, how are you gonna? Oh gosh, yeah, seriously. No, I love that, but that was really impactful for me. You know, we talked, you know, a couple years ago. That was like we just started this podcast, like a year in or whatever it was, mm-hmm. and I just remember thinking like, okay, I don't even know if my small brain. Or the experiences that I've had, you know, really just comes down to, you know, the amount of hours of walleye fishing that I have under my belt with my equipment. I don't know if I'm just ready for this information. So I wrote it down in some notes. I've thought about it a million times, but now that I have forward sonar, that is something that I've really enjoyed. Again, not a tournament angler here, amateur, but I'm picking that up from you guys and I appreciate the information so much. Because it does give me confidence in certain situations. And it's true. I've had just some of my most fun and memorable fish catches the last couple of years with information, you know, guys like you, but you specifically that I've gotten. And that was one of them. That's definitely one of them really stuck with me was at least to some extent in certain situations, I can build a ton of confidence in a scenario that I'm in on a day of fishing, you know, quantifying the bait or the forage when it's present and it's what they want. Like that's part of the structure that, you know, and it's like, I can think that way now. Like I can make that into something real in my brain and help me operate. I don't know. I just like it a lot. But anyways, Tom, I appreciate it, man. I'm always appreciative of your time, man. And I really like the updates. I like the personal conversations. I think that figuring out what makes you tick is fun for all of us, man, because you're just you're definitely a class act. You're doing great things and on and off the water and just kind of hearing about all of that. And you said you got some stuff coming up in August. When could we expect to hear a little bit more about that?
Probably next month, July sometime. I think we'll start giving a little bit more details on it.
Right on. That sounds great. We'll definitely be looking out for that big time. And anything that you're doing, we're always here to support. And so if you launch something and you go on a big old media campaign, shoot me a call. We'll just do one of these. Anybody and everybody that I can spread the word to, you know, we will. So everybody just be looking out for that. Well, anyways, dude, we've wrapped up another solid hour. Again, I appreciate all the stuff, the fishing conversation. I still have a billion questions, but you know, we don't have 4 hours to do this tonight. It would be midnight. So anyways, I will say this, like always, let's wrap this up. Unless something's gnawing at you, let's wrap this up. Promote yourself, your socials, anywhere people can find you.
No, it's Tom Wynn Fishing, both on, still just on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm pretty good about responding to my questions and stuff from any of you, so just feel free anytime you have any questions about what we just talked about or anything pertaining to fishing or fingernails. Just give me, you know, reach out.
Yeah, dude. Oh man. And definitely send some love over to Nate. I just love seeing you guys fish together. I know that, you know, you guys, you know, whatever, you fished your last big tournament together, or AIM tournament together, everybody knows eventually y'all are going to get back together and do the band's going to get back together down the road, and we look forward to that.
We've got a plan. We're going to get back together.
Good deal.
It's going to be different.
Okay. I'm happy with that. I'm happy about that. Anything that you guys are doing together, you know, honestly, when it comes getting back to that social media stuff, I mean, I don't know. I could watch you guys go hunt for mushrooms in the woods together, and it'd be hilarious, and I'd totally watch and tune in. So you guys are just so great together. Two peas in a pod, man. It's meant to be.